inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldviews.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio Network. Glad to be with you today on the program. I'm Walker Wildman. This is At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm your host for this Friday edition of The Core. We'll have on with us Chris Woodward in the last segment, as we do each week, and then we'll have on my good friend Dr. Jessica Peck in the second segment, brand new podcast host for the show, Dr. Nurse Mama. She's also a pediatric nurse practitioner, author, speaker, and mom of four, Baylor professor, by the way. So we'll have on Dr. Peck in the second segment to talk about parenting, to talk about some parenting tips, some parenting advice. So you're not going to want to miss that. Hey, we got the video up at streaming.afa.net. Streaming.afa.net. We got the video up there. We also publish the podcast each afternoon. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do so wherever you listen to the show. You can listen to the podcast. Well, I lost my voice at the beginning of the week, and I'm at about, told Marty, who's running the board for us today, I'm at about 70% or 80%. So maybe by Monday I'll be back at 100%. But I tell you what, you don't know how much you value your vocal cords and your voice until you don't have it. That's what I learned this week. We're in Psalm chapter 71 for the week. Psalm chapter 71, verses 1 to 3, 1 through 3, verses 1 through 3 in Psalm chapter 71. David says, "In you, O Lord, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of refuge to which I may continually come. You have given the command to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress." So the Lord is our rock. He is our fortress. He is our refuge. May that description of the Lord be applicable to each and every one of our lives as we lean upon the solid rock, which is the Lord Jesus. That's Psalm chapter 71, verses 1 through 3. Well, I'll be in Kentucky at the Ark Encounter and the Creation Museum in October. So if you want to come join AFA, we'll be at the Ark. The event's called AFA at the Ark. It's in late October. If you want to find out more about that event, you can go to afa.net/events, afa.net/events, and find out more information. Hey, today, by the way, today registration closes for the Marriage Family Life Conference. So at midnight tonight, it will be closed. At midnight, technically midnight tomorrow, registration to the Marriage Family Life Conference will be closed. So today is it. Today is the last day to register for the Marriage Family Life Conference in July here in Tupelo, Mississippi at the Cadence Bank Arena. So if you want to come to the conference, bring the whole family. That's what we want you to do. We want you to bring the whole family to the conference in July, July 6th through the 8th are the dates. And we'll be here in Tupelo, Mississippi. The entire AFA team will be there working, helping you gain and build upon a biblical worldview with the whole family. It's a family conference. We have a youth apologetic track, ages 4 through 17, and then we have the main session for the adults. So great event, great conference. We've been going on about 4 or 5 years now, and we want you to join us in Tupelo in July. afa.net/events, afa.net/events. Today is the last day to register. If you wait until tomorrow, if you wait until next week, you'll miss the deadline. We're closing it at midnight tonight, midnight Saturday morning. It will be closed. afa.net/events. Well, jumping into some of the stories I want to get to, this what's going on in our southern border has been a travesty for a long, long time. I mean, we're talking decades in the making here. This goes back to Clinton and Bush. I mean, this is not a new problem. And it's rather astonishing. You know, we get really desensitized. We get desensitized. Just the fact that we talk often about securing America's border, and we do so in a very casual, you know, manner. It's really astonishing that we've been so desensitized, and I think it's just part of the it's just human nature. You know, when you talk about the same thing for so long, you eventually become desensitized to it, and that's what's happening with what's going on our southern border. It's truly a travesty. Every year we have between 1 and 2 million, sometimes more than that, illegal immigrants that walk across the southern border. And yes, there's illegal crossings across the northern border too, but the vast majority of illegal crossings happen on the U.S. southern border. And so with that being the case, this is a problem that is fixable. So let's be clear about that. You know, the other side, they'll say, walls don't work, walls don't work. Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. But I will say, walls aren't the only thing that will work. It is a main part of what will work, but the overall system is not functioning properly. Let me just put it that way. I'm not going to say the system's broken, because that's really giving the system a little bit too much credit. Or really not giving the system, I'm sorry, enough credit. What we have here is we have leaders in our nation, and this is not only the White House, folks. This has to do with Congress, too, because they're responsible as well. We've got leaders in our nation, both in Congress and the White House, that just could care less about whether illegal immigrants come into this country and take our jobs. Because that's what's happening, all right, if we're honest with ourselves. That's what's happening. These leaders in America could care less. Well, Walker, how do you know they could care less? Because of their actions. All right, this isn't rocket science. This isn't psychology. This isn't sophisticated trigonometry. This is nationalism 101. Oh, nationalism. Yes, nationalism. It's been around since the dawn of creation. All right, America's not the first nation. America's not the first country to ever exist on planet Earth. All right, nations and borders have been a thing since like Genesis. All right, this is not new stuff. Go back and read the Old Testament about how many nations tried to attack Israel as a nation, and talk about walls and borders and defending one's sovereignty. I mean, this is like, if you're talking about politics and government international affairs, this is like 101. Like, one of the first things you talk about is the idea of a nation and sovereignty and borders and territory, so on and so forth. So this is not complicated stuff. And there are some laymen around the country that could do a much better job at this than the professional politicians in Washington. One of the most insulting things I've heard in a while, and that's saying a lot because there's a lot of garbage out there, came from our Department of Homeland Security Secretary. Mayorkas is his name, and he's been there, I believe, since day one of this Biden disaster. And, you know, this rejection of sovereignty, this totally fumbling of our border security and allowing these criminals to come over here and take American jobs and just be like a tick on the system of America and just sucking all the resources out of our nation is absolutely reprehensible. And but to just pour a fuel on the fire, if you will, of this continual insult that is illegal immigration to the American citizen. Let's listen to Mayorkas tell this reporter about how this really isn't a problem and it's our duty to let these folks trespass into our nation. Let's listen.
How do Americans gain from the immigration paths you're opening, sir? I mean, nobody ever asked this question. Do Americans gain from all the immigrants you're bringing into the country that drive down wages, that push up rents?
Sir, we are a nation of immigrants and we are a nation of laws. Individuals who qualify for relief under our laws, have a basis to remain in the United States. The contributions of immigrants to this country is quite clear.
Oh, come on. Come on. You talk about insult on top of insult. That's not the question, Mayorkas. We're not talking about legal immigrants. We're talking about the hundreds of thousands of criminals that are crossing the southern border. And yes, they're all criminals, folks. This concept, this fake mainstream media concept, that if you just trespass across the border, but otherwise you have no other criminal history, that you're not a criminal illegal alien, that's not true. And that's why I don't like even the Republicans are like, well, we need to stop the cartels. We need to stop the violent criminal aliens. No, we need to stop them all right? Because if you've got somebody trespassing into your house or trespassing into your house and then they've got a criminal rap sheet, it really doesn't matter. Either way, they're trespassing. Like that's like telling a squatter, yeah, you can come squat on my property in my house and basically overstay your welcome or trespass without even being welcomed at all. You know, you can stay, but if you come and you're like violent or you're, you know, you have a criminal history, then you can't stay. No, nobody can stay because it's not your property. That's what we have going on the southern border. And they're all criminals because they're all breaking our federal immigration law. And this whole narrative about, well, if you qualify, well, let's be honest. Let's be honest. The vast majority of these people don't qualify by definition. And there's a couple reasons here. Number one, you can't just say, I qualify for asylum. You can't just do that. All right. There's stipulations, just like you can't raise your hand and go, I qualify for welfare. No, there's more to it than that. There's actually pretty stringent protocol in place and standards in place for those who qualify for asylum legitimately. But furthermore, even if you did qualify for asylum, legally you're supposed to declare that at your local U.S. embassy, which these people are not doing. So the proper way to qualify for asylum is to fill out an asylum application at the nearest safe U.S. embassy. All right. So if you're in somewhere in South America and what these people are doing is they're passing like 10 U.S. embassies on their way to Mexico. And they're not following the proper protocol, so they don't qualify for asylum. The only people that can qualify for asylum on the Texas-Mexico border or Arizona-Mexico border are people that are Mexican citizens, Mexican nationals, all right? Because there is no U.S. embassy or safe nation, if you will, between Mexico and Texas. But you're coming from Haiti, Guatemala, and fill in the blank. Well, you're passing U.S. embassy after U.S. embassy on your way to the southern border, and you don't qualify for asylum because you were supposed to put in the application down there in South America. But see, what I'm doing is I'm explaining things in simple terms, how the law is written, how it's supposed to be applied, but we're no longer a nation of law and order. And the whole Washington cabal has failed us, both Democrats and Republicans, because they've both swapped being in control for the last 30 years, and the problem is still here. It's disgusting. And this is one of the few things that genuinely makes me ashamed of my country. And that's saying a lot. But the way we've botched this whole border thing is an absolute embarrassment. It's one of the few things, if I go overseas, I would not be proud about. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core, or to this Friday edition of The Core. I'm Walker Wildman. I'm your host for the program today. We're live streaming the video over at streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. We're also on The Core's Facebook page with the video there. Just go to Facebook, type in At The Core, and you can find the video there on the homepage there. I do want to introduce a frequent guest of the program and a new podcast host here on American Family Radio, Dr. Jessica Peck, host of the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast and the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes, which we're going to talk about now. Jessica, thanks so much for coming back.
Hey, Walker. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, your podcast has been live for, I guess, nearly 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
And how are you feeling about it so far?
Okay. So first of all, I have to tell the American Family Radio listeners, thank you so much for such a warm welcome. Like, I feel like I should show up at their house with a casserole. Like, that's the kind of, you know, welcome that they've given me, and just reaching out to me, sending me emails, sending me DMs, telling me what they've gotten out of the podcast. I've heard from a lot of nurses who are listeners, and I just feel like we're going to go up and up from here, and we've got a nice little radio family growing. So thanks so much for welcoming me and making me feel like such a part of the family.
Absolutely. And for those who don't know and aren't familiar yet, we're launching, we've launched a few podcast exclusives in recent months. One is Sandy Rios 24/7. And then the second one that we launched was Dr. Peck's podcast, Dr. Nurse Mama, which releases each week on Mondays, I believe, Jessica.
Yep.
And of course, we've got the Coaching Minutes on the American Family Radio Network each and every day, actually during my show now. So, Jessica, I've been listening to your Coaching Minutes, and I'm a big fan. And of course, I'm like sending them over to my wife, and I'm like, you've got to listen to this, because we're in the midst of what you've been through and you're still going through, this thing called parenting. But one of the recent ones that you did, was talking about, how your children and your teens overhear your conversations and even overhear your brief comments about parenting and the struggles and the joys. Give us a little backgrounder here.
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, I am a mom of four. My kids are 20, 18, 16, and 14. And I did not do parenting so well. I mean, in my early days, when I was where you were, Walker, I mean, I was failing miserably. And here I am, a pediatric nurse practitioner. I had the head knowledge, but I didn't have the heart knowledge or the relational skills to pull it all together and make it work. And I often hear from parents, they say, hey, my teenagers won't even talk to me. But they are listening to you. Their minds work like a police scanner in the background. They are developmentally and physiologically wired in their brains to be egocentric. They become toddlers again, and they listen for conversation about them. And especially in the teen years, or even in the toddler years where you are, so often we say negative things about parenting. I'm so tired. They were up again. They're never going to go sleep through the night. You know, I mean, they're in the terrible twos, right? You know, the terrible teenagers. It doesn't matter what stage you're in, there's some negative connotation. And our kids hear that, especially for me as a mom of four teens. You know, my oldest just turned 20, so now I have three teens and an adult. But I'll get prayers and condolences, and I've really learned to have a ready response when my kids are listening. I mean, there is a place for venting and for seeking support. But when they say, oh, teenagers, I say, you know, the thing I love most about this stage, this is what I love. And I'll tell them what I'm loving most about that stage. And my kids are listening. And that's something I've got to always remind myself.
Yeah, you know, Jessica, I've, of course, learned the hard way, like many of us do, and that's okay. That's part of life much of the time. With my children, you know, Lexi and I, it took Lexi and I probably, I don't know, 1 to 2 years to learn some of our discussions are better off after the kids go to bed. Instead of, especially ones where maybe we're disagreeing or we're trying to figure out what's the best route for parenting, many of those conversations are better left for when the kids go to bed or when they're just not around. But another example of this, just personally, my uh, my boys, of course, I've got four of them, and they listen to everything I say, good or bad. And I've always told Lexi, you know, I'm a big, like, history buff, watching documentaries, you know, how it's made, all these different shows about, like, blue-collar jobs and how – basically how America works. And Lexi's – my wife's not really a big fan of it. And she goes, oh, we're watching dad's shows again. But I always tell Lexi and I always tell her that I want to watch TV and learn something. I just don't want to watch TV just to watch TV. And so my son Luke was sitting I was at work. My wife and kids were at home. And my son Luke is kind of wrestling over the remote with my boys. And he tells my other boys, the three younger ones, he says, I want to watch TV to learn something. I don't just want to watch TV to watch TV. But wow. that he had heard from me, and thankfully that was a positive thing. But Dr. Peck, some of the times what they hear and what they repeat aren't good things.
Yeah, and a lot of times they repeat those to the Sunday school teacher, right? Isn't that how it goes? Mm-hmm. You don't have any secrets there. But they do repeat those things that we say. All of what we do in parenting is so much caught more than it's taught. And I think another thing that we do in unintentionally speaking negatively over our children is we generalize struggles that they're having to character traits. So if they're struggling with being on time, we start using shame-based statements like, why are you always so late? Why do you always have to be so difficult? You know, why can't you ever just do what I ask you to do? Why don't you ever listen? And the messages that we're giving them is, you know, you're lazy. You are disobedient. I don't like being around you. And so if we just flip that and just say, instead of saying that they're struggling being on time, instead of saying, why are you so lazy and irresponsible? We say, hey, I see you struggling to be on time. What can I do to help support you through that? Well, this is something that we need to work on, you know, instead of just generalizing it to their character. But that is so much easier said than done.
Yeah, to your point, the children and teens need our instruction, not our commentary. And that's one thing. That's one thing I notice, either myself or overhearing others parenting, is, you know, half the time we're commenting on what they're doing. And most of the time in a negative manner, instead of correcting or pointing them in the right direction, and actually being helpful, in this arena. You know, one thing, Dr. Peck, that I heard you mention in this 1 minute coaching spot was how many positive, statements it takes to overcome the negatives. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, research shows it takes about 5 positive statements for every negative statement that you make. I mean, I know this even as a teacher. I get my teacher evaluations and I could have 20 students say something nice about my class, but that one negative comment I'm going to hold on to. And our kids are no different from us. They do the same. And a lot of times when we're living at the speed of a smartphone, we're much more critical. We're going to point out the things, you know, pick up your shoes, clean up your room. Why didn't you do your chores? Do the dishes. And we don't often say something about the positive. The other thing that we do when we give compliments is we tend to be very general. Like, oh, you did a good job. Like, instead of saying, hey, the way that you got up and spoke in front of your class was really brave. Did you know that speaking in public is people's number one fear? That was really brave that you did that. So trying to be intentional when we compliment them, to be specific and make the compliments generalized to their character. You know, so saying something like, hey, I saw how you looked out for your sister. You are a really good big brother. You always look out for her and make sure that she stays safe. I know that she can be safe with you. Instead of just saying, hey, you were a good brother today. Hmm. So trying to be specific. And what that does, Walker, is it gives us a little bank of positive things that on those days when we're not our best, when our tempers are quick, and it happens to all of us. It happens to me still too. They have that positive bank that they're able to give us a little more grace. And they know, hey, you're not on your A game today, but you have all of those positive things that will help lift you up and carry you through.
Hey, Dr. Peck, thanks so much for coming on. For those who want to listen to Dr. Jessica Peck, the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast, they can go over to AFR.net or wherever you listen to podcasts, just type in Dr. Nurse Mama and you'll be able to subscribe to the podcast there. Jessica, I'm going to put you on the spot. I know you've done a lot of recordings and you're very busy, but we've got next week coming up. Do you know or recall the topic of next week's podcast?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I do. So next week, we will be talking to Greta Eskridge. She goes by Ma and Pa Modern on Instagram. And we're going to be talking about a pretty serious topic, Walker. It's pornography. But this is a very real threat facing families today. And Greta is going to share her journey as a mom and how she's helped to what she calls, this is so uncomfy. So, you know, turn this down if there's little ears, but how to porn proof your family. What is your plan to encounter pornography? And so she's going to talk about that. We'll talk about when do you introduce the subject? How do you talk to your kids about it? At what age? And what should you be worried about? And what should you not be worried about? It's going to be a great conversation. So be sure to tune in. And at the end of every podcast, I give you conversation keys. That is home strategies to talk about these things at home. What is that key that you can unlock the door to the heart of your teen and have some meaningful conversation that will build relationships to navigate those tough days to come?
Jessica, this is a very, very important topic. Family is one of the key institutions, one of the three institutions that God himself ordained and created and set up for a very special purpose. So we've got to continue pouring into families and building them up. And that's what we're doing with this podcast. Thanks so much for your work. And we'll continue pointing listeners your way.
Hey, thanks, Walker. I appreciate it so much. Y'all have a great day. And I'll see you on the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast.
All right, Jessica. Thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Dr. Jessica Peck, host of the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast here on American Family Radio. She also puts out the Coaching Minutes, which are very, very helpful. And if I must confess, sometimes I binge listen to the Coaching Minutes and get a lot of wisdom there, as I myself am parenting with my wife, four young boys. So that's Dr. Jessica Peck. And you can go to AFR.net, the AFR app, or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. Very, very, very good content there. And of course, you can't say that we're not hitting the issues head on. I mean, Dr. Jessica Peck just said right there, they're going to talk about pornography next week. On Monday, they're going to release the third episode of the program, of the podcast, and hit the pornography issue head on from a family and biblical perspective. So be sure to subscribe to the program there. Moving on with our topics here, this story came out, has been really developing in recent weeks, but I want to play a clip here. This is Representative Nancy Mace. I believe she's out of South Carolina. And President Biden and his entire family, we've known pretty detailed, but not as detailed information about their family, some of the corruption there, the Chinese business deals, so on and so forth. I could go on for a long time on this story. But Representative Nancy Mace and other congressmen and congresswomen were able to go into a classified, or not classified, but a confidential Treasury Department room to review the Biden's financials, all right, and listen to what she came out of there saying, clip one.
Just left the Treasury to review over 100 suspicious activity reports on the Biden family, and I have to tell you, there are more Bidens involved than we knew previously. And every time you unturn, overturn, or look under a stone, there's so much more you have to investigate, because it's wild the number of family members involved, and it's even the amount of money that we're talking about in these suspicious activity reports is astronomical. And the accusations therein, the source of the funding, where the money's going, the shell companies, prostitution rings, etc. It's insanity to me that it's not been investigated in the way that it should be.
Whoa. And folks, that is not a hardline conservative congresswoman there. All right. I've actually critiqued her on her pro-abortion commentary that she keeps giving us. But that was Representative Nancy Mace. And did you hear the last part? Prostitution. Funding prostitution through the Biden family financials. Folks, we knew this was bad. We knew this was bad, but we're getting more and more confirmation of that which we already suspected or knew. We're getting more and more information. And the Republicans held a press conference just this week announcing more of this information, which we'll talk with Chris Woodward about more in the next segment. But this family shouldn't be within 1,000 miles of Washington, D.C. They shouldn't be allowed to be within 1,000 miles of the White House. They're compromised. There's no other way to say it. They're compromised. They can be blackmailed, and they probably have been blackmailed. And this is some pretty sick stuff. We're not talking about not paying $100 in taxes 30 years ago. We're not talking about a speeding ticket. We're talking about very compromising, morally reprehensible, disqualifying behavior. And what is very sad and very unfortunate for the citizens of our nation is that this MO is not uncommon in Washington, D.C. This means of operating is probably more common than not in Washington, D.C. To think we just have a political problem or a government problem is to be naive. We have a moral problem. We've got to fix the moral problem before all the other problems can be fixed. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to this Friday edition of The Core. The Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Walker here. I'm your host for today. Rick's with you each Tuesday and Thursday. And speaking of being with you each week, Chris Woodward is with us each week here on The Core. Chris is a news anchor with American Family News. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Well, Chris, we've got several ways we can go today. Mm-hmm. In the first segment, I did talk heavily about the what's going on our southern border, but I didn't really get into why this week is different than others. Give us a little backgrounder on this thing called Title 42.
Yeah, Title 42 is something that has existed for a long time now, but it was brought into play during the Trump administration as a way of regulating border crossings and combating COVID-19. It was put in place somewhere around March of 2020. Of course, many documented cases of COVID-19 were already being found in these United States of America. And so the Trump administration thought it was good to announce this and put it into place so that way we could combat this kind of thing. It's since gone to court many times, and it's, you know, it has expired. So now we have, as we've seen on television all throughout this week, you have people basically coming to the country through the southern border and just walking on across.
Yeah. So we've got Title 42 ending. The Biden administration still has tools in its disposal to get our border under control, but they're choosing not to deploy them. So the Title 42 thing is really kind of at the surface mm-hmm. of the problem, Title 42 ending. But these are the folks that really don't believe in a border at all, which is why we're in the situation we're in. Chris, you've got some stories out of the EPA. You know, you and I joke about
yes.
the apocalyptic, climate change. Mm-hmm. What's the latest out of the EPA?
Well, the EPA announced yesterday new pollution limits proposed for U.S. coal and gas-fired power plants, reflecting the urgency of the climate crisis. Long story short, the EPA administrator, Michael Regan, wants power plants to cut and capture emissions substantially by 2038 in the name of combating climate change and improving air quality so we can all breathe better and stuff like that. He talked about environmental justice and protecting communities closest to the power plants that nobody seems to care about and stuff like that. What's interesting about this is, let's go back a little bit in a time machine, if you will. 2019, one of the many things that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez made news for that year was making a statement that the world is going to end in 12 years because of climate change.
Yes.
The new emissions limits put in place by the EPA are for power plants to meet these needs by 2038, which wouldn't matter because that would be a full 7 years after the world ends. And it's all to combat the climate change problem. Unless I missed something and completely failed you, listeners.
No, you didn't.
We have not defeated climate change to the point where we pushed it back 7 years.
Yeah, we're being duped. I think that's a fair assessment here, Chris. These people, deep down in their heart of hearts, if there is one there, they do not believe wholeheartedly in this, in what they profess, what they proclaim. And the reason I say that, Chris, is because typically when you profess something so pronounced and so critical, if you will, I mean, we're talking about life and death here from their perspective. When you believe in something that you believe is so monumental, game-changing, life-altering, like what they say they believe in, then your actions typically would reflect that urgency, all right? Just like as Christians, we say, you know, Jesus Christ is King. If you don't profess and believe in him and become a Christian, then you will go to hell either when you die or when Christ returns. You'll be cast into what Scripture says, the lake of fire. So as a result, most Christians have a sense of urgency and a sense of enthusiasm in a positive way about sharing the gospel and converting people to Christianity. And so you kind of compare that to what we call the climate religion, which is what this is. Many of them don't follow their own recommendations. I'm talking about the Al Gore private jet, the AOC using a gas stove herself,
right,
driving a Tesla that's got all kinds of natural resources that were just destroyed for this, Tesla and the lithium batteries. I mean, these people are not true believers.
Yes. John Kerry, for example, flew over to the UK and back for the coronation of one King Charles, who has been sounding the alarm over climate change. But yet they all made it a point to fly over there and back, spewing the emissions that are supposedly causing the problem. I've said it before, probably won't be the last time. The people sounding the alarm over what they call man-made climate change are the ones contributing to the supposed problem the most. It's not you and me. It's not the listener. They're all these jet setters. You know, if Charles was really that concerned, he could have said, I'm going to do this and we're going to put it on Facebook Live. Please stay at home. Do not spew your emissions. There's not enough carbon offsets to combat the problem. But he didn't. He wanted everybody over there, and they all spewed their emissions, and they expect us to change our ways while they still eat cake and whatever it else.
Yeah, cake and ice cream if you're Nancy Pelosi. Hey, Chris, on this point, I saw some video coverage, some video footage of the southern border. You know, we talked about illegal immigration. Mm-hmm. And it was showing all this trash that these criminals leave. Of course, if you're breaking federal immigration law, do you really care about littering? No, you absolutely don't care. So they're trashing our southern border quite literally. So not only are they insulting our nation, breaking our laws, but they're leaving a mess while they're doing it. But I looked at that, Chris, and it was like disgusting, the type of trash and debris that they leave in on these ranches down in South Texas.
Right.
And I'm thinking, The Biden team is encouraging this. They're allowing this. They're like part of the human smuggling operation down there. And they're littering our southern border and the Rio Grande Valley and the Rio Grande River, et cetera. And these are the same people that lecture me that I got to ride my bike to work. I can't drive my truck to work. I got to ride my bike to work.
Yeah. And they're all, you know, down there. It's been a sea of humanity down there for days, leaving a mess there, as you mentioned. I tell you, if you are a Republican wanting to run for office next year in the national election, I would advise you to come up with a really good, effective, and consistent communication plan on how you need to answer questions about this problem, because the media is going to use the whole tug at your heartstrings. And listen, I can say as a father, I understand why a man might want to bring his wife and kids here for a better life because they're struggling where they are. But what politicians need to be able to communicate is, look, it's not that you can't come here. But we have a nation of laws. You have to follow a system of rules. If you go through those hoops, which we will apply to everybody equally and fairly,
they're trespassing.
But instead, they're going to do the whole, well, give us your tired, your hungry, and your poor. Yeah.
No, don't. Don't give us some. Don't give us your tired, your hungry, and poor through illegal means.
Right.
To your point, Chris, we don't walk around going, you know, we've got the line to check out, you know, at the store. But if you want to cut everybody, you can, and we'll take you just the same. No, you wait in line, you wait your turn.
Yeah.
And we have a very generous immigration system. We accept over 1 million legal immigrants every single year.
Yeah, I mean, there were stories yesterday from Fox and Newsmax and other outlets that basically the Border Patrol was going ahead and letting some people in under the promise, you know, raise your right hand, you'll come back for a hearing.
Yeah, to your point, I saw, Chris, where the CBP, Customs and Border Patrol chief, said that instead of they're basically going to do this expedited processing and drop these illegal immigrants off in the streets of Texas border cities and tell them to come back later for their hearing date and for all their paperwork. I mean, they're not even going to the processing center.
Right. Yeah. It's They're going to go into the shadows. They're not going to show up because they're assumed they're going to get deported or something.
Why would you show up? I wouldn't show up.
We're going to have so many people illegally working and it's going to be a huge problem. We've talked for a long time on the network and all the shows we've had here about how illegals will take jobs from people, and maybe not in every profession, but they will cost an American, perhaps even an Hispanic person, a job. Based on somebody trying to make gains for themselves.
Yeah. I'll tell you how you cut that out. You put a 50% tariff on wire transfers back to Mexico, all of them. You'll nip that pretty quickly. Yeah. It'll become very unfun to work in America illegally, because that's what they're doing. They're wiring their money back to their family. And munching off of our system. It's a very, very immoral thing to do. Chris, you got some story out of Media Research Center.
Yes.
About this Republican congressman and some other stories.
Yeah, as we have reported this week on AFN and will continue to do so, Republicans on the House Oversight Committee on Wednesday, they had a big press conference in which they laid out a ton of evidence of what they call the Biden family's influence peddling scheme, as Committee Chair James Comer and Nancy Mace and Byron Donalds and other people pointed out on Wednesday, Jim Jordan as well. Basically, Joe Biden was a, quote, walking billboard for himself and his family to make huge financial gains while he was vice president under President Barack Obama. Comer pointed out that they were getting all kinds of money, millions of dollars, in fact, from people in countries such as Romania and China through a system of LLCs and other wire transfers and shell companies that Hunter Biden and his associates set up. And Comer said this is not just about Hunter Biden. This is about the big guy himself, President Joe Biden. He named a ton of family members and said they have made, quote, millions of dollars over the last 10, 12 years.
And you may have just said this, but you said a lot there, but 10 family members.
Yes.
Like, this isn't just like Joe and Hunter,
right?
Or Joe, Jim, and Hunter, which is Joe Biden's brother, Jim. This is President Biden, Jim Biden, Hunter Biden, and seven others.
Yes, and if this is true, what these Republicans alleged this week, it's a very interesting twist, because this is the same Joe Biden who just borrowed from us to be able to have his IRS bring on dozens of new agents to go after so-called tax cheats.
Right.
When he himself, according to these House Republicans, has been making money illegally from foreign nationals going back to 2011, 2012.
Somewhere yeah, and right not reporting it properly. You know, I thought, Chris, that when Joe Biden ran for president back in 2020, I thought, I mean, this guy will definitely not get a second term. I mean, you know, number one, I didn't think he would beat Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's a lot of questions about the election in 2020, but the reality is he was sworn in. I didn't think he'd be sworn in. Definitely thought, I mean, Joe Biden will never get a second term.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are. He says he's running. But, Chris, the financial incentive for holding public office in Washington, D.C. is pretty high. It might explain why somebody like Joe Biden will be in office until he dies.
Yes, and you know, the reason why a lot of people will probably vote for him again in 2024, assuming we do, the Lord tarries, and we actually see Election Day in 2024, the reason a lot of people will support him is because they will have no idea of the story I just shared. And I say that because our friends at MRC and Newsbusters did a study and found that none of the three broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, or NBC, covered the press conference from the House Republicans.
That's astonishing.
It is. It's for people out there that have never worked in journalism, it's not that hard to put the story together. You lead off with what the Republicans alleged, and then you find somebody from like Biden's side to say it's not true, and you end the story.
You know, it's astonishing, even in the era of media propaganda 24/7. I mean, I know these folks are lefties. I know they're Marxist. I know they pick and choose what to cover, and they've always got a slant.
Mm.
But to just straight up not cover it at all, I mean, these are the news organizations that in Washington, D.C., if a Democrat says, we're going to have a press conference about our picnic next week, you've at least got some of the major networks there showing up and at least going to give it some print, at least going to give it some web coverage. But they didn't cover this on the primetime networks at all, you're saying.
They did not. They spent 11 minutes on the George Santos case. Now, George Santos is the Republican from the state of New York.
George who
right. may or may not have lied about his background. So they spent a combined 10 minutes and 57 seconds on the Santos charges. Now, I will say, as a news person, I do agree with that being covered. Is it the lead story and the thing that you should go, you know, wall to wall with? No, it should get some news coverage. But, I mean, you had huge accusations against the leader of the free world illegally making money.
Yes.
And
with documents.
Yeah. They could have, you know, they could have had, like I said, somebody from Biden's side come on and say, this is not true. We're being attacked.
Yeah.
It's because the economy is doing better and they want to keep him from getting elected. They could have done it that way, but they didn't even do it that way, which adds ammunition to the weapons for people saying the media is in the tank for Biden, and here's why.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we need more alternative news sources, and one of those that we already have is American Family News, AFN.net. If you want trusted news from a Christian perspective, go over there to American Family News, AFN.net. Subscribe to their daily newsletter, and we'll keep you up to speed on what's going on in our country, around our nation, and around the world. Chris, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. At the Core here on American Family Radio, Walker Wildman with you today. Thanks for joining the show. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.